Chapter 7. The Changing Nature of Violence. There is necessarily much that has not been covered in a short introduction of this nature, including systematic, structural, and institutional violence. Social factors such as class, poverty, gender, and race pose persistent problems and can lead to both physical and emotional acts of violence. Some historians have argued that there is no empirical evidence demonstrating that the modern economy, the modern state, modern manners, or modern science have had any long-term impact on humanity's predispositions to violence. On the contrary, they argue that the scale of collective brutality dramatically increases with the rise of modern social organizations, while the character of interpersonal violence remains essentially the same. That said, when nation building is successful, rates of violence tend to be low, but when nation building fails, rates of violence tend to be high. Similarly, there is an argument that as the state increased its hold over people and some forms of violence, such as public execution, declined, other forms of violence, such as domestic violence, became far less public. There is some indication that gendered and interpersonal violence is on the rise in some countries around the world. At the same time, according to a United Nations report from 2016, more countries experienced violent conflict than at any point in the last 30 years. As we have seen, the state can both diminish violence while at the same time being responsible for some of the worst crimes committed in the 20th century, from concentration camps and gulags to the elimination of political and ethnic enemies. There is no one ideology, or indeed a particular form of state, that is solely responsible for mass killings in the 20th century. Democratic states are just as likely to respond in violent ways to perceived threats to their authority, and just as likely to commit ethnic cleansing and genocide as totalitarian states. This was especially the case for the 18th and 19th centuries, although less so for the 20th and 21st centuries so far. Nevertheless, ideology played a significant role in war objectives during the Second World War. Communism, fascism, Nazism, and consequently had a tremendous impact on the levels of killing. If violence can be driven by official state policy, it can also be carried out by violent communities or groups of sub-state actors over which the state or the authorities have little or no control. This was often the case on the colonial frontier, but it is also sometimes the case in zones of war. The Eastern Front during the Second World War is a case in point, but so too was the partition of India in 1947. During one of the largest migrations in human history, millions of Muslims trekked to West and East Pakistan, now Bangladesh, while millions of Hindus and Sikhs headed in the opposite direction. Many hundreds of thousands never made it. As for the interpersonal violence, it is impossible to measure with any degree of accuracy those forms of violence that are termed private, especially domestic violence, child abuse, sexual assault, and rape, largely because they are either not reported or significantly underreported. Whether we experience violence in the world today, or whether we consider violence to have increased or decreased over time, is very much dependent on race, class, and gender. If one is white, middle class, and living in an affluent society, it is possible to never encounter an act of violence during one's lifetime. That's not the case in many parts of the world, however. I want to end this book by looking at different kinds of violence that have emerged in the modern world, acts and institutions which were once not considered violent, but which now are. Incarcerations is an example of an institution that is rarely seen as violence. It is often seen as a more humane form of punishment than, say, corporal punishment, but that is not always the case. There are about 9 to 10 million people in prison around the world, half of whom are in the United States, China, and Russia, where people are held in such poor conditions that their mental and physical well-being suffers. Physical and sexual violence tends to be high in prisons. In several Western countries, Australia, Britain, France, and the United States, minorities are often overrepresented in both numbers of incarcerated and in the numbers killed by the police. The highest rates of indigenous incarceration of any country in the world are in Australia. Modern-day human trafficking, although it is usually not for life and is often associated with contemporary migration movements, is also considered to be a particularly pernicious form of violence. According to the latest statistics by the International Labour Organization and the Walk Free Foundation, there are more than 40 million people in the world today who are forced to work through fraud or threat of violence for no pay beyond subsistence. This is what the ILO calls the underside of globalization. Around 30% are trafficked for sex, while 70% are in situations of forced labor. Modern estimates for slavery and human trafficking range widely, depending on the methods used to estimate the number and the definition of slavery being used. But the number could be as high as 100 million men, women, and children. We simply don't know. Most of the trafficking occurs in Asia, particularly across the Greater Mekong region of Cambodia, China, Laos, Myanmar, Thailand, and Vietnam. There is no doubt that slavery is flourishing. There are more slaves in the world today than existed during the whole of the Atlantic slave trade, and it has evolved over time to cater for rising consumer demand in the world for cheap goods and cheap sex. The sexualization of violence has become a prominent feature of video games and virtual spaces. In addition, the web has become a site in which abuse is rife, not only against women, but when it does involve women, it generally involves threats of violence, rape, and other physical attacks. Public humiliation and shaming on the internet, where people can hide behind their anonymity, has become routine. But so too has violence against women. The pillory and public shaming, it would seem, have not really left us. They have just taken on new forms. Men are also harassed online, but by far the biggest target is women. The abuse experienced by women is often sexist or misogynistic in nature. Online threats of violence against women are often sexualized and often make specific references to women's bodies. According to one study carried out by Amnesty International, black women were disproportionately targeted by online abuse and were 84% more likely than white women to be mentioned in abusive or problematic tweets. Women of color were also more likely to be mentioned in such tweets than white women. We don't know the scale of the abuse because Twitter won't provide any data. Why should this matter? Because things like revenge porn, cyber harassment, and trolling can have real-life effects on people, inducing psychological disturbances such as anxiety, depression, and PTSD. And real-life consequences, including drug and alcohol abuse, self-harm and suicide. Can we say the same for hyper-violent video games, or what has been dubbed torture porn in feature films? In visual media, one can see gratuitous, highly sexualized, extreme forms of violence that have increased in tempo and cruelty over the years. That is part of the contradiction of human nature. We can, at the same time, be both repulsed by real violence and titillated by imaginary violence. But it also goes to the interplay between culture, on the one hand, and the brain biology and behavior, on the other. Neurohistory might show the way here. It's built on the premise that emotions can have an impact on the ways in which neurochemicals react. The very fact that the things that we do and see and experience can have an impact on our moods, That is, that culture can have an impact on our psychology, and possibly vice versa, is at the core of this approach and is meant to encourage us to ask why and how this can happen. We can extend our historical examination of violence to what humans have done and are doing to the environment and the animal world. Environmental disasters and the mass extinction of animals brought about by humans have been referred to as a slow violence, which is incremental rather than spectacular. This is a kind of structural and systematic violence that often forms the background to more spectacular eruptions of violence, such as warfare. But there is also a connection between what has been called ecocide and genocide in many parts of the world. More animals are now killed by human consumption, not to mention depletion of the world's oceans, than at any previous time in human history. As our environmental awareness grows, the industrial farming of animals and the killing of wildlife for consumption is also being seen as violence. Reliable statistics on the animal slaughter of farm animals around the world are difficult to obtain. But in 2004, the United Nations Food and Agricultural Organization, FAO, estimated that hundreds of millions of animals, horses, sheep, cows, calves, goats, turkeys, rabbits, and billions of ducks and chickens are killed every year in factory-like animal processing centers. Whatever form of violence we may be confronted with, social and political change can only come about through increased and accurate statistical data, which can feed into broader social awareness. Social awareness can lead to movements that result in changes in attitudes, and that consequently can lead to a less violent world. Put another way, how we decide to interact with violence, what we choose to remember and what we choose to forget, what we choose to focus on as a pressing social and political issue and what we choose to ignore is a dynamic and constantly shifting cultural, political and social phenomenon. What remains constant in our human history, however, is the enduring presence of the traces of acts of violence at the individual, community and state level, whether they are officially sanctioned or not. These are permanent reminders of the impact of violent acts, whether as Primo Levi so eloquently put it, they are privately engraved on people's hearts or recalled in public forums. The haunting shadows that have been cast by violence indelibly remain with us. This concludes Violence by Philip Dwyer. Narrated by Gary Paul Williams. Copyright 2022 by Philip Dwyer. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Oxford University Press and was produced in the year 2022 by Tanta Media, Incorporated, a division of Recorded Books, which holds the copyright thereto. Please visit tanta.com for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks.